Hello and welcome back to this event. My name is Jai Bristow and I'm one of your hosts. And today I am so pleased to be welcoming back the fabulous Dr. Roxy Manning. Welcome, Roxy.
Thanks for having me, Jai.
Thanks for joining us again. I always love our chats. And today, I'm really excited about this one because we're talking about politics, which is a chat that can, just that word can already bring up feelings and bring up anxiety, right? So let's start by why it's so important to talk about this topic on a conference about anxiety.
Absolutely. I think nowadays politics is, it infuses everything that we do, every experience that we have as human beings living on the planet. Different political parties are making decisions that influence things like, do we have access to clean water and what kinds of protections do we have? What kind of care and rights do we have in relation to our bodies, our relationship, even what's happening with our climate, right? What's happening with our planet and the long-term survival of this world? And so for many people, politics is no longer just, you know, who am I going to vote for? But it's, what does this actually mean for my well-being, my family's well-being, for sustainability in the future? So people are having a huge amount of anxiety around the outcomes of the various political races that are happening around the world and what it will mean for themselves and their families. And it feels so much more charged. The rhetoric is really divisive. There's a lot of putting people down and polarization. And for so many reasons, people are just feeling hugely anxious whenever the idea of politics comes up. The stakes are high.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's really interesting because certain people identify as apolitical, but like you just described, it really politics is infused in every aspect of our life.
Absolutely. I think saying that you're apolitical is kind of saying, you know, well, I don't breathe air, right? I just live and I'm not paying attention to all of these things that are hugely impactful. So being apolitical is still also taking a stance. It's saying I'm willing to give my power to someone else.
And so now we've established politics really is infused in every aspect of our life. But there's a lot of different political opinions out there, right? So how, and that can also bring up a lot of anxiety. So how do we navigate those kind of differences of opinions within our environments?
Right. And I think that is actually one of the huge sources of anxiety, because most people, not everyone, as you mentioned, some folks are apolitical, but most people do have some beliefs. They're going to fall on one side or the other of whatever issue is being centered in political debates, and they feel really attached to it. And so when I look at my neighbor, my coworker, my family member who's holding a different political stance, it engenders a lot of anxiety, like, how do I have a relationship? And I've had people say that. How can I have a friendship with someone who believes X, Y, or Z, right? It's like, that's someone who says that people like me should never get married. How can I possibly have a relationship with this person? And so we have anxiety about our regular relationships, what that means for us. We also have anxiety about, how can I trust that I'll be heard? That if I try to bring up why this matters to me so much, how do I know that you're going to hear me? Political debate, when we look at television, tends to be people ping-ponging back and forth. I'm going to drop my piece, you're going to drop yours. We're not really hearing each other. So the first step that I think is important in addressing the anxiety that comes up for people is to create spaces where you can be heard for what's important to you, for what you value.
And how does one do that?
So there are two, at minimum, there are two ways that you could do that. The first is recognizing that I need to be heard, I need to be understood for what's important to me, but I don't necessarily need to be heard by the person in front of me. I don't necessarily need to be heard by my family member, by my neighbor, by my coworker. And having places, finding places where I can speak what my truth is, I can speak my worries about what's happening in the world, and have that be understood and reflected is really important. So even though, and I'll talk about this in a little bit, even though I have some concerns about the kind of siloization that happens, we could still say, you know, find people who share your beliefs, find people who share your values, and have regular meetings with them that can help you affirm what's important to you and why it's important, without you having to be defensive, without you having to worry about what the impact will be. So join that political party, you know, do lectures with people who share your values. So that's one place. The second place is to find places, and they do exist, where we can have healthy debate, right? So debate where it's just us yelling at each other and not hearing each other isn't helpful. It contributes to more anxiety. But the debate where I say, hey, Jai, I understand that you believe this, and I'm confused because it's so far from what I believe. Help me understand. Tell me why you believe this. And I actually listen to you. I reflect back what's important to you. And then you do the same for me, can really support us in feeling less anxious, because I'm no longer going, oh my God, the world doesn't make sense, right? How can someone believe this crazy thing? I'm actually taking the steps to understand, why is it that someone might believe something that's so different than what I believe?
That makes sense. And I think, you know, it's really important what you're saying. Of course, we all want to be heard. And yet, I think sometimes it can be difficult to be willing to hear someone when their views, their political beliefs are can be very, considered very harmful, right? Like you said, that thing of it's not just not someone not wanting someone like me to get married, for example, but sometimes people's very existence is being questioned and undermined, and people are being like persecuted under the guise of politics. So then what do we do then?
Absolutely. So this is another reason why people are experiencing anxiety in relation to what's happening politically, right? If I'm looking at the news and I see that there's a movement that says people who look like me are going to be banned from entering the country, right? Or people who look like me are going to be kicked out of the country, like we no longer have a right to be citizens in whatever country we're in, I'm going to feel hugely anxious. And I don't want to engage in a dialogue with somebody who believes this if I think all I'm going to hear is justification of why this belief is true. And so a huge piece of this is being able to take care of yourself. Know what battles make sense for you to get to fight, to engage in. I don't need to have that dialogue with the person who's telling me that, hey, you're queer, you shouldn't exist, right? I don't need to hear this person. What I am interested in hearing, possibly, would be the person who says, you know, I don't know much about this, but I keep hearing that maybe folks who are queer aren't safe, and I don't know. That would still be a really hard thing for me to hear. But if the person is genuinely saying, help me understand, I'm willing to do the work because I want to help them get like, no, let me give you the real information, right? Let me give you the real research. I actually feel there's an avenue for me to reach that person. So I choose not to engage with people where I think they're going to be completely closed off and their only intention in engaging with me is to put me down or to kind of like use me as a platform for their point of view. I am willing to engage with somebody who's believing something that's harmful, even if it's still hard for me to hear, if I think there's an openness there, an openness to learning and to changing. So a really big piece there is to take care of yourself first, prioritize your well-being, what you have capacity to hear, and then say no to some conversations.
Right. So it sounds kind of like it's a pick your battle kind of situation where you're like focusing on your own needs, your own capacity, your own limitations and who you want to engage with. But it's moving away from the I don't talk to people with those views, quote unquote, or I don't talk to, quote unquote, those people. And it doesn't matter where you are on the political spectrum. People often have that very kind of closed, divisive idea, right? If you're not with me, you're against me, and that kind of thing. And so what I'm hearing you say is don't put yourself in harm's way, but do be open-minded, be curious, try and understand where people are coming from and connect to them on a very human level.
Absolutely. And I think part of the reason this is important is because part of the reason we feel anxiety is because we feel completely helpless. It's like there's so many big things that are happening that are impacting us. And it's like those people out there, the people who are elected, are making all these decisions. And so many of us have lost our sense of agency and being able to have any impact. And so I'd like to have people think about what are the different kinds of circles of influence that you could have, where you could have impact, where you could regain a sense of agency in your life. And one of it could be, maybe I could talk to this neighbor who, you know, doesn't believe what I believe, but they're open to this and notice that there's a shift in what they're believing. There's a willingness now in them saying, oh, of course, you know, I'm not going to like sign this petition for that person saying they can't move into the neighborhood because that makes no sense. I've had an impact. And so I start to feel a little bit more hope, a little bit less anxious.
I love that. A little bit more hope, a little bit less anxious. That's, you know, and I love the way that you're really focusing on like you say, anxiety is linked to helplessness. And so when you reclaim agency, then that helps with the helplessness and therefore with the anxiety. And so what are some other ways then that we can reclaim agency around politics?
Oh, I mean, there's so many lovely ones. During the pandemic, one of the things that happened was, you know, we had a lot of stuff happening with the politics. I live in the United States. There was a lot of stuff happening. And even some of the decisions, and this is true around the world, politicians were making decisions that directly impacted our healthcare, impacted what we had access to, and essentially who lived and died, right? And so being able to say, okay, what can I do locked down in my house? Like, talk about the ultimate in helplessness. And so some of the things we did was, okay, if the only thing I can do is to start a letter writing campaign, if the only thing I can do with politics is to make a phone call every single day to my politicians so they know that somebody believes this and is active and is voting for them, that actually gave me a tiny little bit of agency. And I've seen stories coming out of the pandemic. One of their classmates' mom organized 350,000 letters that were written to politicians. 350,000 from people coming to her door, picking up lists and sending this out, right? This is a huge way to reclaim a sense of agency. Like, yes, things are crazy. They're horrible out there, but we each have an impact. We can each do something. So if all you do is like make a phone call every morning, a 2-minute phone call to your politician saying, I just want you to know, this is important to me. This is what I believe. This is what I'd like you to see you do. And you get 5 of your friends to do that. Just think of how that snowballs, right? And what kind of impact that can have. So look for the little ways that you can actually start engaging, not just with changing opinion at the local level with your neighbors and relatives and friends, but also start to engage in the political process so that you can reclaim a sense of my voice matters. Yeah.
I love that. And I think that that's really helpful for people who feel really helpless and disempowered and don't know where to begin, of giving some areas where people can begin. But what about people who feel anxious because they're the other end of the spectrum and feel really overwhelmed by how much they feel like they should be doing and, you know, get quite burnt out and feel overwhelmed and it's just a lot. Mm-hmm. What about those kind of people?
Absolutely. So I wrote a book, The Anti-Racist Heart, with my colleague, Sarah Payton. And Sarah is really amazing at talking about some of the unconscious things that motivate us into this idea that I have to be the person, in some ways, I have to be the person that saves the world. We look at the world, we see how things are falling apart and how dire things are, and we'll start to have this idea inside of ourselves, and it's unconscious, right? We don't even know that we have it, that I have to give every single ounce of my energy, every single aspect of my life's worth into making a change. And I have to do this in order to have any idea, any belief that things can be different. And Sarah calls this an unconscious contract. We make these contracts around how we're going to move through the world in order to help us have some strategy to manage our anxiety and our helplessness, our hopelessness. But those contracts are unlivable, right? So the people at that other end of the spectrum are often the people who've somehow made this vow with themselves that unless I'm doing every single thing possible, unless I'm burning myself out in order to try to affect a change, I'm part of the problem. And I'm going to have to burn myself out in order to feel hope. Once you're burnt out, there's nothing you can do. And so one of the things you can do is to start to work with those contracts, to ask yourself, and our listeners can do this right now, right? So to say to yourself, like, I tell myself, I will, and fill in that I will. And then the hard part for this kind of unconscious contract that we make with ourselves is the no matter the cost to myself, right? And this is where the burnout comes out. I'm going to do these things no matter the cost to myself. So if you can find a statement that's true for you, the one that's kind of leading to the burnout, leading to severing relationships, right? Another way that I see people making these statements are, I'm going to speak up and I'm going to advocate for change and I'm going to always call out injustice because I need to do this in order to feel hope that the world will be safer, that people will thrive, no matter the cost to my relationships, right? So people are doing these things, they're feeling anxious, they're burning through their relationships because it's their only strategy for hope. So we find a contract, we find this vow that we've made to ourselves, and then you ask yourself, is this actually sustainable? It's just actually doing the thing that you want to do. If your to-do list was a little bit smaller, would you actually be able to accomplish more, to stay in the game longer, to not burn out and have to take periods of time off in order to care for your well-being, but to be able to say, I can actually plan vacations, do things at a pace that's sustainable in the long run. So once you find a contract, you can ask yourself, is this what I really want? Is this serving me? Is this actually accomplishing what I wanted to do? And give yourself permission to let it go. So looking and finding these places where we have these unconscious contracts and learning how to release them could be one of the ways that we deal with the situations that push us into some more anxiety.
I love that. I really love that. And it's interesting you were talking about, you know, how these unconscious contracts can impact our relationships. And so I'm going to use that as a segue to come back into this political piece around relationships, because so many of our relationships are impacted by politics, both in the sense of what you said, politics impact all the aspects of our lives, right? So they can literally impact our ability to marry someone, our ability to have kids and have a family, you know, those kind of things. But they can also impact relationships if you have family members with opposing views and, you know, all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So how do we, you know, you talked earlier about listening, but how do we have those conversations?
Right. So, you know, this conference is an anxiety conference. And so when I want to have these supercharged conversations with people that I love, I often lead with that vulnerability. I'm feeling anxious about having this conversation. And I center what matters to me, why I'm feeling anxious. I'm feeling anxious because you matter to me and our relationship matters to me. And I've seen this conversation tearing apart families, creating a little bit of distance towards us. So I want to have this conversation with you, but I want you to know it's not, I want to have this conversation at any cost. I want to have this conversation in a way that's connecting for you. And I want to check in with you. What comes up for you when you think about having this conversation with me? So that's the first piece. I invite people to think about the process part of the conversation, not just the content. How can I acknowledge this relationship and why it's important to me before I dive into the content that I want to bring? And doing that, getting both people to hold that intention for, let's stay connected, wherever we go, can help to create a bit of softening, right? A willingness not to, like, you know, do the scorched earth kind of conversations that so often lead us to rupture and irreversible ruptures in some relationships.
And then, so say people are at the dinner table with their family and someone says something very like political that's against someone else's political beliefs. How do they respond then in that moment, for example?
Yeah. So the way you don't respond is, oh my God, that was so stupid, right? I cannot believe you're thinking this, which is what a lot of us do, right? We just kind of immediately start judging and blaming and shaming the person. And then we get nowhere. So instead, to the extent that you feel willing to do this, and that's really important, I don't want anybody to stretch beyond their capacity, beyond what feels safe for them. But if you feel safe, I would recommend going with vulnerability rather than logic. We can't win a logical argument in these fields anymore. We're living in the time of fake news, of, you know, people getting fed all of these studies and ideas and beliefs. And I will tell you, there's a research study that says this. You're going to come right back with your research study. So I don't even want to go to the whole, like, is that logical? What are you thinking about, for the most part? Instead, I want you, my dear family member who loves me, to understand when you say that. And, you know, I've been using marriage equality because that's up for me for some reason recently. But when you're saying that people who love the way that I love can't get married, and I've been with my partner for 20 years, I want to know if you're understanding the cause for me. I'm really wanting to know if you understand what it means for me to be in a relationship where I have no legal protection if I get sick, and this person that I own a house with might not be able to, like, be in the hospital with me because we don't have any sort of legal rights to be together. And could you tell me what comes up for you when you hear that? So I want to talk to people about how I'm personally impacted and why it matters to me and what I'm feeling anxious about with some of these laws, rather than trying to convince them in some sort of logical way about what's true. And when I do that, when I invite you into my world, into understanding what I'm anxious about, and then I can also do that for you. What are you anxious about when you think about this? We're inviting an atmosphere of care, of saying that, yes, politics are about creating rules and structures, but those rules and structures are around creating lives where people thrive. And when I hear about where you're not thriving, then I want to at least come up with an alternative, something that's like, okay, maybe I believe this, but I also don't want you to not have the right to be able to make decisions about your loved one's health, right? I don't want you to like lose the house when you die because you weren't able to get a mortgage together. So, wow, let's talk about what that would look like if I think marriage should be a biblical thing, but I also want you to have rights, right? And I think these are the kinds of conversations that could be much more heartwarming. And because I know that you're not judging me, that you're really listening to me, I might feel a little bit less anxious.
I think that's really beautiful. And I also want to recognize that it's sometimes easier said than done, right? Going into vulnerability, being very compassionate, being able to have those grounded conversations. And, you know, Conscious Life, on, we also produce a lot of trauma conferences. And so having done that, I know a little bit about trauma. And so sometimes hearing those kind of different political opinions can actually be very triggering for people, right? And it can bring up a whole bunch of stuff. So I know this, we're talking more about anxiety today, but I feel like the two are, you know, very
absolutely
connected and linked. So when we get triggered, how do we get from triggered state and like very, and then anxious about the whole thing, and the, like, and then, you know, witnessing other people shouting and yelling at each other over the dinner table can also provide a lot of anxiety, for example. So how do we deal with all these different dynamics and get to heightened tension to a place of being able to have calm, compassionate, mutually respectful dialogue?
Well, one thing that I think people don't do often enough is to interrupt and stop these conversations when they're happening. So, you know, if people are at the dinner table and they're ping-ponging back and forth, it is perfectly okay to say, stop, let us pause, because we are on opposite sides of this issue and we're just actually creating more harm. So could we take a pause for a moment so everyone can check in? Like, what is it that we're trying to accomplish here? So call for a pause, call for a break. If no one is willing to stop, get up from the table and walk away. Say, and you don't have to do it with like, oh my gosh, y'all are horrible. It could just be, I need a break. I'm going to take a break and recenter myself. And I know sometimes when I've gone to family dinners, I've had friends back home who are like, you know what? I'm going to be spending the week with my family. Can you be on call for me so that I can like call you up and say, I need some empathy. I need some support. So you can also set up some structures so that when you need somebody who does see you, who does value you, you can call that person and say, okay, 20 minutes of empathy, then I can go back to this dinner. So calling in your community, calling in the people who can help support you would be really important. If you don't have that, have a journaling practice, right? I love being able to just write down when I'm in the middle of these really intense dinners. Sometimes I have these little, you know, they're these 3x5. I don't know what the size is in other parts of the world, but in the US, they're these little index cards that are spiral bound. You can keep one of those and I doodle on it and people get used to me doodling, but you can also take notes. Like as I'm hearing people talk, I start to check in with myself and I do self-empathy. Wow, what's important to me when I hear the person say that? Why is that so painful for me to hear? What are my needs? And I start tracking myself so that I have a sense of no matter what else is happening here, no matter how much I'm not being seen, I see me. I understand why this matters, what's important, and I can track this for myself and reflect it for myself so I feel a little bit more grounded. Practice your breathing. Practice like all of the different things. Like there's some even small things that can help. If I'm at a dinner table and somebody's going crazy and like yelling and screaming, if I get an ice cube and I put it in my mouth, I can just focus on the ice cube in my mouth, the sensation of coldness, and let that kind of somatic sensation help me bring come back to my body so I don't get dissociated. I'm not flooding and moving away. So there are a lot of little tips that can help us stay grounded in our seat, notice the floor under my feet, to help me stay with myself in the midst of everything that's happening. But most of all, get up and walk away. It's okay to do that.
I love that. I think that's so important to remember. You know, we sometimes feel like because of social norms that we have to stay and we get frozen or whatever. But to remember that, like, practicing self-empathy and taking care of one's own needs, not being afraid to get up and walk away. And we also talked about this and more in the previous Anxiety Super Conference, where we talked about the anxiety of speaking up. And that conversation is available on the Conscious Life platform. So I recommend people go check that out if they want to know. So Roxy, I'm really loving this conversation, right? And I think that we've touched upon a lot of really fantastic points. And I'm wondering if is there anything else that feels really important for you to share around this topic around politics and anxiety?
Yeah, I think we live in a world, my guess is that long, 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 long ago, people lived in very insular communities where pretty much everyone believed the same thing. They had the same access to the same information. And the folks who didn't have any choice. They were silent. They didn't know how to show up in these communities where there was so much pressure to conform, right? And now we live in roles where we are bombarded with 100 million different ways of being. And I celebrate that, actually. I am celebrating that because we are so valuing diversity, I get to be me. I get to say, oh, I don't fit all of these norms and beliefs that I was told was the way to be when I was growing up, right? I am very different than my family of origin. Love them, and I'm still very different than them. And I get to be me. And it helps me a lot when I think, and you know, different people listening to this might have different viewpoints. Some people might be like, well, that's exactly what the problem is. But for me, it helps me a lot when I think, I want to value diversity because it's actually what allows me to exist and what allows me to be me. So the person who believes something that's 100%, 180 degrees opposite from what I believe, I want them to have the right to believe what they believe. What I don't want, and which is where politics come in, is I don't want people to force their viewpoints on everyone else. It's like, you get to believe what you want to believe, and you get to control the sphere that you move in. I get to control the sphere that I move in and have believe what I want to believe. And so when I think about politics, that's what I want to do. That's where I put my energy. How can I show you that I understand and I'm listening to what you believe in? How can I ask you to do the same for me? And how can we create structures where everybody can thrive, where everybody is able to live the life that they want to live without encroaching on and forcing other people to have to live their lives? And that feels really hard in today's world, right? It's hard to believe that, and you know, I do a lot of anti-racism work. It's hard to believe, and when I take it to the radical edge, that I can say, you know what, white supremacist person, you can have that belief in your corner of the world. You know, if you are living in a place where you want to do that, go for it. You know, you can do whatever you want in your house. You just don't get to control what I do in my house. And you don't get to control what happens in public spaces, right? So my goal is, how do we create public spaces that work for everyone? And that's what I want politics to be about. So I'm going to do everything I can, and this helps my anxiety, to make my world, the places where I move, a place that's safe for everyone who looks like me, who thinks like me, who walks like me. And I'm going to do everything I can to make public spaces accessible for everybody. And that means that sometimes it's some conversations I don't want to have happen in public spaces. I don't want to have a white supremacist saying, hey, this isn't okay. And I want to calm down some of the rhetoric that's happening that's stirring up a lot of the anxiety where I'm not sure that I'm going to walk into a space and feel safe. I want to create places that are clearly defined. You want to have this conversation? It's going to happen in these spaces, and I get to choose to enter that space. And some spaces, I want to have them be safe spaces, spaces where we can say, we're just getting together as humans, because I think it's so nuanced and complicated that I don't know.
I think it's brilliant. I love what you've just said about like how in the end, like political opinions is one thing, right? And everyone is entitled to their own opinion. And the difference, though, is when people want that opinion to, and that into which is an opinion is internal, right? And want to externalize it and force other people to exist in their own version of reality. And I was spoken in a previous conference to Dr. Betty Martin, who was talking about boundaries and like how we're all responsible for our own internal landscape. And that includes thoughts, emotions, what we put inside our bodies, even, you know, and everything that happens within us. That there are often people don't always understand the difference between internal and external. And so again, people sometimes think that because they're having an opinion or they see the world a certain way, that everyone has to therefore adapt to the way that they're seeing the world. And so I love what you're saying about keep seeing the world that way if that's the way you want to see the world. It's okay to have those thoughts and opinions. I can't control the way you think and see the things, and that's not my job or your job or anyone else's job to change someone else's opinions and control the way someone thinks. However, if the way you think is actually having an impact, or like, not the way you think, but if through thinking that you're trying to then control other people's behaviors and other people's rights, then that's where it's not okay. That's where the line is. That's where it gets messy.
Absolutely. And so when I think about what creates anxiety for me, it's when people are trying to control what I and others have access to. And what helps with my anxiety around that is realizing that I do have agency. I have personal agency. I get to say, no, you don't get to say that to me. You don't get to do that to me. You don't get to constrain me from entering certain spaces. And I get to have agency in saying, I get to vote for and support and put my money and my energy and my time into supporting the people who believe the things that I believe. And both of those stances, my personal agency and my political agency, help me to feel a little bit more hopeful, a little bit less helpless, and a little bit less anxious.
I think that's really beautiful. And yeah, I think that that's where sometimes it can be difficult, right? Is because some political people want to create, as you were saying, safe spaces and, you know, an environment where everyone can thrive, and regardless of opinions and thoughts and stuff. And other people, and again, this goes on sometimes different sides of the spectrum, but other people want people to behave in the way that aligns with their views. And so I really love what you're saying about, we can't control other people, but we can have agency. We can find ways of creating change and in our own environment, and we can influence politics, and we can talk to people, and we can write letters. And it's not about changing people's opinions so much as you were saying, creating safety and influencing what we can influence, reclaiming agency, finding hope in what sometimes feels very hopeless landscape, political landscape.
To any listener who's feeling anxiety about politics, find one person you can talk to who understand and can reflect back what's important to you, why you're feeling anxious. Find one action you can take that can help you have a sense of agency at your local level and then at the national level. And then find one vision you can hold on to that's like, here's what I'm working towards. We're not there yet, but if I can see the through line from here's where we are, here's the long-term vision I have 7 generations from now, and here's how I see this one action possibly leading us on that path, I might start to feel a little bit less anxious.
I love that. And I think that's brilliant. I do have one last question though, whilst we're on this theme, which is, if certain, because we've seen it happen, right? Like women's rights being taken away, trans rights being debated, or trans people's existence being debated. You talked about like same-sex marriage, that kind of thing. And so what can happen is people in power with different quote-unquote opinions end up controlling our ability. And so, of course, like you said, you've given examples of what people can do, but what do we do when our autonomy is being taken away by the people in charge?
So there, I want to speak to this from two edges. One edge is, what do we do when we are the individuals who are impacted by some of these laws and rules and regulations that are coming out of politics? What do we do when we're the people forced to implement those? Because I've seen, and I want to talk about the second first, I've seen beautiful examples of people who said, I know that law was passed and I'm not going to honor it, right? Mm-hmm. Like even things like, I know that there's a law that says people who do abortions are going to be prosecuted. And I've seen government officials say, and in our jurisdiction, we are not going to enforce that law. We are not going to go out and press charges against anyone who does that. So there's a lot that could happen between a law being passed or regulation being passed, and there's still human beings who are implementing that law. So I want everybody who's in a position of influence to decide, what are you willing to stand up for? What are you willing to say? Like, yeah, that was a legal rule, but it's not a moral rule, and it doesn't match what I believe in. again, really controversial, because we've seen people taking the stance that I would be, oh, that's not quite the place I would want you to go with that. You know, somebody who says, I'm not going to allow people to get married in my jurisdiction. Here in the United States, we had somebody who kept refusing to marry people, even though the law said that she had to, right? But it is still important for me to people to recognize that you still have agency, even if you're tasked with enforcing a law when laws are passed. So that's one end. The second end, and you know, this varies depending on where you live in the world, but the second end is really looking to all of the nonviolence movements that exist, right? All of the movements that said, you know, oh, you're not allowed to do X, Y, or Z. And the people who said, I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to let you put me in jail and I will be the test case that will draw worldwide attention to this injustice so that the laws can be changed. So those are the two extremes, right? People who are willing to take really big stands for what they believe in that have and continue to have huge changes in what ends up happening in the laws, right? I would not exist. If rather, even my children wouldn't exist. My children are multiracial. I think it was in 2000 in the United States, the last law that said interracial relationships was still on the books in one of our states. In 2000, one of my children was born in 1999, right? So it's like all the people who said, yeah, that law exists, but I'm going to do what I want, right? We get to do that. We get to take our own stance. And it creates its own form of anxiety. But for me, it also reduces anxiety when I live in complete alignment with what I value. So so much there.
I love that. It really gives me hope hearing you speak about that and remembering that, you know, there are people out there taking a stand in whatever way, shape, and form they can, right? And so for some people who have more influence, it might be, you know, it's doing one thing. For other people, it's doing something else, and they can be smaller or bigger scale. And I'm shocked by the 2000 as someone who was born well before 2000, even though I have a baby face and is also multiracial. I was not born in the US, but nonetheless, it's anyway, we're running out of time, but Roxy, this has been brilliant as always. How can people find out more about you and your work? And do you have any upcoming projects you wish to mention?
Sure. People can definitely go to my website, RoxanneManning.com. And you can find there links to my books, my podcast, and then my upcoming classes. Oh, and look at that. There are my books.
Here are your books. I'm a big fan of you and your work. And these are your books. And I have a special dedication from you in them. So just showing them for anyone who wants to purchase them. These are what you're
wonderful. Doing. So absolutely. I really am proud of those books. I think that they really speak to and help us deal with some of the anxieties, especially the anti-racist heart. If you feel anxious, there's some great exercises on how to release some of those contracts I talked about earlier. Projects that I have that are coming up, if you are someone who wants to learn how to share, I teach something called nonviolent communication. And if you want to learn how to share this in a way that can help influence a lot of different people and be inclusive, I've got a class coming up to help people develop curriculum and share it in ways that are not typically shared. You can find that on my website as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so, so much for your time today, Roxy. I really appreciate it.
Thank you again for a brilliant interview and great questions. Thank you, Jai.